Welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast. My name is Yevgeny Feyman. I'm a contributor to Medical Progress Today, as well as a research associate with the Manhattan Institute. With us today, we have John Kaplan and Daniel Gorlin from the Boston Consulting Group. John is a senior partner specializing in healthcare services and a co-author of the recent report, Alternative Payer Models Show Improved Healthcare Value. Daniel is a principal at Boston Consulting Group who specializes in healthcare services with a focus on healthcare reform. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
So today's podcast will focus on how different ways of paying for healthcare can improve value and save costs, with a focus on the Medicare program. As many of our listeners and readers of Medical Progress Today will know, Medicare is the federal government's insurance program for the elderly and the disabled. The program costs close to $600 billion annually, with over 50 million beneficiaries. What many outside the Beltway may not know, however, is that Medicare is not just one single program. Medicare beneficiaries have the option of receiving coverage through private insurers through a program called Medicare Advantage. John, Daniel, could you go into some details about how this program works and what exactly makes it so different?
Yeah, so Medicare Advantage is a relatively new program. It came out in the mid-2000s. And what the impetus behind Medicare Advantage or private Medicare was to bring the private health insurers into the delivery of health care for that elderly, disabled population that's eligible for Medicare. And with the theory that if the private health insurers entered into the space of Medicare, they would help to improve the delivery, the cost, the quality, all the other dimensions that you would say when you evaluate healthcare. But that was the logic, was to try and bring the private side into a public program, we call it, the Medicare program.
And basically at its core, the difference between fee-for-service and Medicare Advantage is that in fee-for-service, you basically, the beneficiary is on the hook for 80% of the cost, but the government has covers 80% of the cost, and the beneficiary needs to cover 20% of the copay. But in exchange, you can see any, basically, the network is wide open. You can see any providers that you want. The Advantage program ultimately is very different, where there's at its core, there's a managed set of people in which you're allowed to go to kind of your network, very similar to on the commercial side. And in exchange, the copays and potentially the exposure to out-of-pocket costs come down dramatically. So that at its essence, is the difference in the value proposition for the actual Medicare beneficiary that the Medicare Advantage program provides that Medicare fee-for-service does not.
So, well, would it be fair to characterize Medicare Advantage as really putting more of the impetus on the beneficiary to try to make smart decisions about their health care and get them more involved with what health care they receive, rather than kind of separating it all to the government and to providers?
We're painting with a pretty broad brush here,
mm-hmm.
But what Medicare Advantage is trying to do, or the private side is trying to do, is it's trying to find a way to deliver the care that a member would get if they were in regular fee-for-service Medicare and do it where they get better outcomes at a lower price. That's what they're trying to do. How they do it is sometimes, to your point, of bringing the member involved and having them a little bit more involved in their process with greater ownership, somehow potentially bringing in providers and having providers take on, aligning incentives and take on some level of risk. They're trying to create motivation for members to join Medicare Advantage over fee-for-service, so they create richer benefits or they throw certain things in with maximum out-of-pocket expenses or something along the line.
Mm-hmm.
But you can imagine it's behaving very much like a free market.
Right. So I think this is a great point to get into the study that John co-authored, and Daniel, I'm told, you provided some valuable contributions on as well. And this report looks at differences in health outcomes between people in traditional, quote-unquote, fee-for-service Medicare and those in Medicare Advantage. Broadly, it appears that Medicare Advantage enrollees tend to have way better health outcomes, including better mortality, and even when you look at treatment of chronic diseases, they tend to fare better. Could you guys speak to some of the results a little bit?
Sure. So first of all, there's a lot of research that predated the report that we wrote and the analysis that we had done, which basically speaks to the fact that it appears for similar populations that Medicare Advantage is less costly than Medicare fee-for-service. We didn't investigate that, but there's been a fair amount of work that's been done that researches that dynamic and says that. And we're not espousing whether that's true or not. We didn't do that research, but there is a lot of common writing about the fact that Medicare Advantage. And some could say, well, it's because they serve different populations, they're sicker or they're not sicker or whatever. We didn't speak to that point. What we said is that no one seems to have investigated the outcome for basically, and it really wasn't Medicare Advantage versus Medicare fee-for-service. What it really was is was Medicare fee-for-service versus aligned incentives. Basically, there are these new provider models that are coming out. They just happen to be, a lot of them are in these Medicare Advantage type of programs, but there are these new models that have come out which align the incentives for the providers, physicians, and other providers, and the payer, being Medicare Advantage in this situation. It's a really nice population because in the U.S. we can get a robust amount of data that looks at all these different members of populations. We can match the populations and try to see if there's a difference as you move from really fee-for-service, where there's huge autonomy by the patient to navigate the healthcare system, to all the way to the other side where there's fully aligned, where you are asking the physician primary care group to take on responsibility for a portion of the population and have, when they take on the responsibility, they have responsibility from the care of these members, but they also have the financial responsibility where they can do very well if they do, if the membership is healthy, and they can do less well or poorly if the membership becomes quite sick.
So to build on John's point, basically what the findings show is not just as you move from Medicare fee-for-service into Medicare Advantage that you see the outcomes improve, but as you move from even within Medicare Advantage and you look at those programs in which the provider and payer incentives are not aligned through risk-sharing agreements, you start even seeing better outcomes when you move over to those risk-sharing agreements. So as much as there is some great insights between Medicare Advantage and Medicare fee-for-service, I don't want to lose kind of the insight around even within Medicare Advantage that as you're starting to see greater alignment of incentives, you're even seeing greater outcomes as we move in that direction as well.
Right. And greater outcomes means that, you know, theoretically mortality is better, meaning less people are dying. Morbidity is better, meaning less people are getting sick. People are getting less invasive treatments. They're getting less, I'm trying to think of a nice word, but they're trying to find the way that they are being treated feels to be, in many regards, leading to a better outcome.
Yeah, their hospital stays are shorter. Their readmissions are lower.
Right.
And again, it's happening quickly, and it's happening also in the sickest patients. So, you know, I really feel that on the outcomes side, as we were going into this, I kind of think we weren't sure what we were going to see. I mean, I think we've seen all these programs in place, and we were truly hoping that the movement of kind of better care management and better alignment of incentives would actually result in that greater outcomes. I think that's what we believed in our hearts, and it was really great to see the data play that prove that out.
Right, and I think that's a terrific point, that even within Medicare Advantage, as you move towards what are called capitated HMOs, which are basically when a provider gets a fixed dollar amount to treat a patient over the course of a year and either gets penalized or can share in savings depending on how effective their care is. It seems like this had broad implications for the healthcare system as a whole. Do you guys see more managed care taking place in the private sector? I mean, we know that PPOs, which are slightly tighter networks than traditional health insurance, are really widespread, but are we moving that needle any further?
Based on different clients that we work with, they feel that in the population, like, you know, where you have the member for a long period of time, like a Medicare population, where the members are not transient, they want to get as many members as possible, as a rule, into risk-sharing arrangements. Because, again, once there's an alignment, as Daniel said, the outcomes from a quality and a cost perspective appear to be better. So, therefore, they feel they can't have too many members who are being managed in sort of a population health mentality and being managed by a clinician to drive better preventive medicine and better care of medicine throughout. So the direct answer to your question is yes, that more and more. And you see this in the Medicare side, and you also see it at the state level in the Medicaid side. I know we're talking about Medicare here, mm-hmm. but the growth of Medicaid into the private managed side has increased dramatically over the last few years.
Well, and I just want to stop you for a second. For our listeners and readers that may not know what Medicaid is, Medicaid is more and more becoming the federal slash state funded program that caters to the poor. Under the ACA, it really becomes health insurance for the poor, not just the disabled, the blind, those with children. Is that correct?
That's 100% correct. And the responsibility for Medicaid, even though it may be funded pretty heavily by the Fed, is at the state level. There are some mandates, as you appropriately referenced, that came out of the new ACA. But at the end of the day, they're being run at the state level. So when the states are having financial challenges, they tend to look for ways to manage the Medicaid business as efficiently as possible or as low a cost as possible. And a lot of those states have looked to the private side to try and come in and create managed care programs for their Medicaid population.
Right. So it seems like one of the challenges then is that there tends to be a high fixed cost with establishing managed care plans, especially if you're trying to establish an HMO to use all the proper disease management techniques, develop strong networks with providers. You do need to invest quite a little bit up front. Have you seen kind of pushback by insurers, be it because of that high fixed cost, because they're worried that their populations might be more transient, as you said before?
Well, Evgeny, I think that's the last point. It's all about how transient that population mm-hmm. ultimately is, for them to actually feel the need to, or to get the return on the fixed investments on, you know, preventative care and disease management. In a place like Medicare Advantage, where you typically have a member that stays in a plan for a very long time, it's a no-brainer to actually put these types of investments in place. It's a great question on the commercial side, right? I mean, on the commercial side, you can make the argument that that is what's keeping it from really taking off. The notion that through your employer-sponsored insurance, the notion is you may not be in the same program or the same plan in 2 years or 4 years or 6 years, and whether or not those investments actually make the most sense. You know, it's a great question. Where are we going to go in the next 10, 15 years with the emergence of both the public exchanges for the individual and private exchanges, potentially for on the employer-sponsored side? You might get less transients at that point, mm-hmm. With full adoption of those things, where you might actually start seeing the investment take place even for the commercial side.
Right. Well, and I'd like to start bringing this back to Medicare Advantage just a little bit, because there is a lot of criticism of the Medicare Advantage program. Under the ACA, for instance, reimbursements to Medicare Advantage are reduced to match fee-for-service levels a little more closely. One other criticism I've seen come up is that Medicare Advantage tends to, quote-unquote, cherry-pick healthier enrollees in order to save costs, while the other argument, I think, the Government Accountability Office had a report on this, is that Medicare Advantage tends to upcode in order to make enrollees appear sicker than they really are. Do you think your study speaks to any of these criticisms?
The study doesn't. We didn't tear that apart to analyze that. So if we did normalize the population, so we said we took similar genders and similar geographies and similar ethnicities and similar health status. So Medicare reimburses based on the number of diseases that you have that you're coded for. And so we took similar populations and we normalized the two populations or three populations that we would compare, all had similar attributes, so we feel pretty good about that. With some candor, having worked in this industry for a long time, I have never found the division of a health insurer that goes around and cherry picks. They want as many members as possible. Their growth shows that they want as many members as possible, so therefore into the Medicare Advantage. So I don't see them going around, so we're going to go into this portion of the country because there are healthy members, and we're not going to go into this portion. The distribution seems to be pretty good. The one other thing I would say is that the way they are reimbursed, the potential reimbursement is increased if the people who the members they have in their population are sicker. Obviously, those people cost more. That's why the reimbursement is increased.
Right.
So it's in the best interest of the health insurer doing a Medicare Advantage to find the sickest members and treat them better so that they get the greatest denominator. And then they improve against the greater denominator because that could be the greatest value that they can provide for the members. So there's a huge number of incentives which would argue against cherry picking. But again, I'm sure there's people out there who argue that there is cherry picking. We have not seen it, and we've talked to many insurers, and we've not seen it where they have, as I said, a division to go cherry pick. So So again, that's just a point of view.
Yeah, and just to build off John's point, you know, in 05 and 06, when Medicare Advantage was renamed to Medicare Advantage, and they put in the risk adjustment, you know, kind of exactly to what John was pointing out, that you actually, as the population gets sicker, you actually get paid higher for that population on a per member basis. And ultimately, you know, kind of coming back to what the study is saying, to the extent that you can manage incredibly well this sick population, you know, kind of if I take on that sick population and I do everything that kind of our study shows and end up getting to lower costs and better outcomes, then you ultimately have really an amazing program that's delivering on what it is it's supposed to be doing, probably against some of the sickest people.
Right. Those are great points. For our listeners and readers, we try to combat some of the regularly spouted, what we view as myths surrounding Medicare Advantage. And I do think your study takes a great approach by matching similar populations. But I also want to get into some of the policy implications of this, if any. There's definitely been pushback from the right side of the spectrum, arguing that Medicare Advantage may be doomed now, or with the ACA having been passed, enrollees just aren't going to move into Medicare Advantage. Is there any truth to that? Do you think health reform weakened Medicare Advantage?
At least initially, most people felt that with the reform of health care, that Medicare Advantage would be hurt. Candidly, the very first thing that was being done, even before the bill was passed, was to cut the rates for Medicare Advantage. That was done by, as part of the initial step for healthcare reform. So therefore, that doesn't bode well for what's going to happen to Medicare Advantage. Again, I would argue that Medicare Advantage should have had its rates cut for the administrative, and that was the plan all along, and just maybe this was just how it was going to be executed or implemented. The piece that I think is probably most important here is, you know, we at BCG are very much fans of the market. Medicare Advantage growth rate has been phenomenal over the last, 6 years. It's just growing like crazy. Currently, Daniel knows the numbers better than I do, but currently I think the percent of the population, the Medicare population that's in Medicare Advantage is 28-29%. And the enrollee rate,
wow,
of everybody who's eligible, people who turn 65, who turn are eligible for Medicare, is 41%. So you don't have to be a mathematician to sit there and say, looks like it's growing faster than where it is right now. So that all sounds good. So then you say, okay, well, why is it, if it's such a bad idea, why is the market running to it? Well, it's running to it because of some of the things it offers, which is it's a fixed cost. You're able to budget your cost into healthcare. And again, I'm not espousing the values of Medicare Advantage. I actually think that's the left. If we look at the Medicare Advantage population, they tend to be a poorer population in the aggregate than the rest of Medicare fee-for-service.
Right.
So they're trying to manage that 20% copay that Daniel talked about before. So the bottom line is, it doesn't feel like this is, if you were going to build an insurance product, this is what the product you would build if you were an insurance company, because it's not the rich people and all that. You're going after, I would call it, the common folk. And the interesting thing here is that it continues to grow. And the interesting thing here to me is it looks like it's got a couple of pilot ideas that may be beneficial to other portions of our population. That's actually where we get so excited about this, is that it appears there may be some solutions that are, you know, the diamond in the rough in here. You know, sort of the alignment of providers and payers and driving that through seems to be driving to a better outcome and to a better cost story.
And Yevgeny, the only thing I would say is I think a lot of people would say that the Medicare Advantage program was definitely in the crosshairs of the administration in terms of, and the fact that it's been able to grow and grow in the backdrop of rate cuts and other, you know, programs like accountable care programs on the Medicare fee-for-service side, the fact that it's been able to grow and grow at the rate kind of proves to its resiliency. And in fact, you know, I would argue it kind of proves to what we're seeing in our study, you know, both in terms of lowering costs and delivering great experiences and great outcomes for the actual member. So even in that backdrop of being in the crosshairs, you know, I think that it's proved to be a really strong program, and one that, as John said, we can learn a lot from and potentially even export to other places.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. I think that this about wraps it up for the time we have. So to wrap it up for our listeners, it seems that Medicare Advantage is making use of really, really great incentive structures that could have a huge impact on the healthcare system as a whole, increasing value, saving costs, and improving healthcare outcomes. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.